Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and we are here this evening on this beautiful October evening in Atlanta, Georgia, where the weather is just absolutely gorgeous. I am hoping that wherever you're listening from, both online or calling in, that it is a marvelous afternoon for you. There's something special about October that we'll chat a little bit about, we'll elaborate a little bit about later on after we've done our prime show. However, I don't know for the rest of my fans, but fall or autumn, as it's called sometimes, is my favorite time of year. So I hope as you gather in the backyard, you're enjoying the autumn wherever you are, but you are thinking that you are on the island of Jamaica where all the seasons are all wrapped into one and it's just one beautiful, easy year. And tonight, as usual, the trade winds are gently brushing your cheeks as you relax in your favorite easy chair, wherever you are comfortable. So we can go on a virtual island, go off for a virtual island evening. So I expect you to be relaxed and be informed. And because we gather here in the backyard each week to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. Tonight, we are going to be exploring some more history. And as I like to call it, I'm bringing some stories to life that have been researched by some very wonderful historians. And tonight, again, through the courtesy of Dr. Rebecca Tortello and the Pieces of the Past from the Jamaican Gleaner, tonight we are going to be going back in time and revealing some neat little information about how our beloved Daily Gleaner got started. So I hope that you will enjoy the show, will enjoy the contents, and as usual, I ask you to share it with your friends. So if you're on my list, you know what we're going to be lavishing about this evening. And if you are a fan of the show, you know we like to have participation, number one. And, you know, this is a casual evening to lavish. So we go off and have our little sidebars and make up our own stories or our own thoughts about what we think the story is or what it means to us. So we hope that you will join the Labrish. So tonight we're talking about printing in Jamaica, the history of the printed word and the evolution of the Daily Gleaner. And I found the story quite interesting, and I hope that you'll agree with me. And I always like to remind you that most times, unless we were interviewing someone live, these stories are not mine. I gather them from mostly the historians. I'm always either reading from the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage or pieces of the past from Jamaica or Wikipedia or Dr. Joy Lumsden's materials. So tonight we've been doing a series of articles by Dr. Rebecca Tortello, and I am really enjoying them. So for the history buffs and for the people who just want to know more about our culture, I'm going to be reading for, and this information, incidentally, is available to you at just Google Pieces of the Past Jamaica, and you will get to several marvelous articles. But as I say, I know a lot of people don't have the time to read. Hopefully they'll take the time to just come by even later after the show, relax, and get some hopefully useful or interesting information. So I'm going to start off with the doctor's article from the newspaper. The printed word can be traced back in Jamaican history to the early 1700s. Printing began in 1718 with the publication of the weekly Jamaica Courant, C-O-U-R-A-N-T, now which holds the distinction of being the second regular newspaper in the Americas. Unlike in the Spanish and Portuguese colonies, where printing was used as a means of spreading colonization, in the British colonies, where sugar was the primary focus, printing arrived slowly, more as an administrative tool and a commercial vehicle. So now we know that perhaps that's why we were the second in the Americas and not the first. Anyway, in a 1717 dispatch to the British Council of Trade and Plantations, Jamaica's governor, Sir Nicholas Laws, described printing as of great use and benefit for public intelligence, advertisements, and many other things. And this was taken from a publication by Cave in 1975, and she gives credit to the page and all of that. So I'm back to the article again. The governor noted that the usefulness of local newspapers to commerce and advocated for the establishment of a Jamaican press, helping to make Jamaica a center of printing in the New World. Law's attitude marked a significant change in the perspective that had prevailed during the 1600s, when printing was closely regulated by the government and restricted to London, especially to Cambridge and Oxford universities. During the latter half of the 17th century, following the restoration of King Charles II, printing was severely controlled. All licensed books and printing equipment were regularly subject to seizure. It was not until 1693 that the Licensing Act that had so strictly regulated printing was loosened. And within a very short time, printers spread all over England. Local newspapers abounded. In the colonies, however, progressive attitudes like Laws were slow to evolve. Many administrators were wedded to the attitude such as that of Virginian Governor Berkeley, who in 1671 thanked God that there are no free schools nor printing, and I hope we shall not have these for 100 years, for learning hath brought disobedience and heresy and sects into the world. Not sects, S-E-C-T-S. I was wondering if he was talking about sects. And printing had divulged them. And libels against the best of government. God keep us from both. This is a sidebar now. I was really taken back with that, because as I go into history and bring these stories alive, I'm always reminding our listeners of how similar attitudes exist even now. Now, here is this man who is a big government official hoping that people don't get information for 100 years because it hath brought disobedience. You know, so now when we think of communist countries that, you know, where the information is subdued and not allowed and the government controls everything, we think that this is such a horror. But I had no idea that even in London, in Britain, with the British government in the early days, all of that information was subdued and regulated. So I don't know for the rest of the visitors, but I find that, you know, quite interesting. Of course, I always admit to my audience that I was never big on history, and I'm sure all of this information was being spread and taught. I certainly didn't get it. So I didn't know that we were, I mean, we supposedly, the free world, was thinking that way in the good old days. So we know how wonderful it is now that we live in the age of the Internet, where, you know, even the countries that want to subdue the information, because people have cell phones and that take pictures and they can text, and whatever happened in any part of the world can be on the Internet in a nanosecond. So anyway, here again, I am asking the visitors on the board if you would like to join the Labrish, add your 2 cents to what we're bringing alive, or make a comment. Please hit 1 on your telephone, because that will indicate to me, I know you're there because I can see you on my switchboard, but it will indicate to me that you want to join the Labrish, and we always welcome that. So we learned a little bit about, you know, printing in the good old days and how it started in Jamaica. There's always forward-thinking people in every society, in all parts of the world, I mean, since the beginning of time. So here we go now back to the article. Printing comes to Church Street, and for those Kingstonians, I'm sure you know where Church Street is. Now, not long after Law's 1717 dispatch, Englishman Robert Baldwin established his printery on Kingston's Church Street. Not surprisingly, Baldwin's first publication, of course, was something about the governor that was coming then. He got an exclusive on that. Now, it is possible that Baldwin was awarded the sole license to print on the island. He made a wise choice in locating his new business venture in Kingston because it enabled him to have relative equal access to both Spanish Town and Port Royal, the island's 2 main towns. Here again, the historians pick up the parts that are even so relevant. Now, you know, if a person has any business sense, they try to be where the action is. So this Mr. Baldwin was thinking right. Now, Baldwin arrived in Jamaica with a wooden printing press with Dutch types. A meticulous man, he was conscious that the types might be hard to repair in Jamaica. So he brought close to 20 cases of type with him. Some were still in use close to three decades later, long after his death. They were still in use. Now, Baldwin also anticipated that paper supply would be a potential problem. So he also carried a large stock of paper of varying sizes. He did not arrive with any ink, however, which leads one to believe that he, like famed American printer Benjamin Franklin, made his own ink. The Weekly Jamaican Courant. Baldwin began publication of the Weekly Jamaica Courant in May 1718, and it ran until 1755. Now, costing one bit or three half crowns and molded after the London Gazette, the Courant contained information common to many English colonial newspapers. Prices of goods, slave auctions, and shipping news, as well as advertisements. Any form of information of interest to the plantation owners and the merchants. The main audience was deemed worthy of print. Notably, each issue had to be signed as having passed by the censors. So I wonder who the heck the censors were. It didn't state here. Examples of goods advertised include very curious pocket telescope, reading glasses, and machines to place in the breast. What the hell was that? Powerful cordial for use against gout. Huh, that's some sort of product, I suppose. Writing paper, rulers, ink. Oh, they were selling ink and they didn't make, and he must have sold his own ink. Letter case and other forms of stationery. Baldwin sold many of these items as well as books. Book binding and selling were to constitute a large part of his business at his Church Street shop. I would say he was sort of a real merchant because he anticipated the needs and had a little of everything. So I can see, you know, we know now that our Jamaican small business people are very, very entrepreneurial and they're very creative. So this goes way back, although these weren't the same kind, but the thought of having a little bit of this and a little bit of that, just what people need, goes far back. Okay, back to the article. Examples of goods that, oh, well, I did that already. Occasionally, local news was reported. Big events such as the hurricane of 1722, in which 400 people lost their lives in Port Royal when the eastern end sunk, and the 1721 trial of Captain John Rackman and the female pirates Mary Read and Anne Bonny. We just did a story on those two. So they made, you know, some of the first publications of the newspaper. So that is one story that was well documented. Now I'm back to the article. Acts were also published, including that of 1722, for the more effectual suppressing of privacy. That must have been an act that was passed. And of the 1730 for the better regulating of slaves and rendering free Negroes and mulattoes more useful. These are the articles they're referring to. And preventing hawking and founders, first gleaner peddling, and enlarging the time for the commissioners collecting outstanding debts. So what I gather they're saying here now is that besides all the things they were advertising, they were giving this information on acts that were passed by the government. Now, sale of the weekly Jamaica Koran seems to have been well organized. The Koran itself regularly included detailed instructions of where to get the paper, island-wide. And it was, of course, all over. But it's interesting to see the planning that went into it. This is my sidebar. Only a few copies of the Koran have survived and are now found in London's public record office. The two earliest Harbour Street copies, interestingly enough, survived because they were essentially waste copies, and Baldwin used them to make pasteboard for a logbook for British Admiral Vernon. They are now located in the British Museum with the collection of Vernon's papers. So in other words, this man used it to pack something that he thought was important, not given the idea that the packing material he was using to preserve what he was shipping to England would become just as valuable. I thought that was quite interesting. So sometimes when we are led to do one thing, there's always a reason for it, because according to this documentation, those are the only two copies that are of this particular publication that is still around and available. And we're talking about something that went on in, 1717. Damn. I mean, I don't even know how it can still be, I wonder if it can be handled or it's just displayed. And as usual, whenever I am reading or bringing history alive, I always ask the listeners on the board to let me know they're there and feel free to interact with the Laprish. So we go back to the article, Unless I See a Raised Hand. Now, Robert Baldwin died in 1722, and control of the business fell to his wife, Mary. She proved a wise choice, and the business prospered under her direction. Hooray for women, even in those days. Mary was a forward thinker, and advertisements in 1720 reflected her new business ideas. Boy, being a woman myself, whenever I read news, even though it goes back so far, where a woman is recognized for what she does, it really, really inspires me. So for you ladies out there that might have an inspiration to do something, I say go for it. And, don't let anyone hinder you. Just go with the flow. Because this woman in 17-whatever, when her husband died and left the business to her, I am sure it just as it's not easy now, especially in some cultures. We have cultures all over the world that do not recognize women. So you can imagine that in those days, I don't think they were very recognized as business women. Then, the same way it is in some cultures even today. So it is just inspiring to me when I read about these women who I am sure had to overcome a lot to do what they are being recognized for now. So we can all take strength in that and encourage women to go with their passion and to make a difference. So back to the article. And at this time, I'd like to take a break to remind our listeners that may come by later on to listen to the show that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. Today is October 13th. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm all carried away here in the story. But and the year is 2010. So at this time, I'm going to take a break from the reading and tell you, some of our listeners might have already gotten an email that has been circulating about the specialty of this particular October. But for those of you who might not have gotten it, I'd like to share with you what I thought was very interesting. According to the email, and I have not really verified it, this only happens every 826 years. But whatever, whether that's correct or not is irrelevant right now. But this month, the month of August, which is also Halloween, this is the only month that I suppose during our lifetime that we will have in October 5 Fridays, 5 Saturdays, and 5 Sundays. And that is something very special because of, you know, the calendar, I suppose. So that's just a little tidbit I'd like to share with you. So hope you enjoy that. So now we're getting back to the article. In 1734, however, Mary seemed to have turned the business over to her sons, Peter and Robert. No copies of the Quran published by them seem to have survived. However, all that remains of their work are 2 pamphlets of 1740 and an issue of another newspaper, the Jamaica Gazette, which was printed in 1745. In the Gazette, we learn that the Baldwin brothers seem to have carried on the family tradition of solid business sense, parlaying their printing empire into a merchant banking house, employment agency, and insurance brokerage. So they parlayed it into not only the newspaper, but I suppose they capitalized on other things that were needed at the time. Smart boys, perhaps took it after their mother. Both brothers, however, seem to have passed away shortly thereafter. After 2 decades, printing in Jamaica not only moved on to new management, but seemed to have diversified. Printing was not limited to newspaper or to Kingston, and never to the government. By 1720, Spanish poet Daniel Israel Lopez Laguna, who fled to Jamaica in the late 17th century to escape the Inquisition, held the distinction of being the first Jamaican resident under British rule to publish a book. His book titled Some Hispanic Words, you know, Hispanic Idiomas, and you can all read it on the, it's a long title. And it turned the palms of David, I suppose that's what it means in English, turned the palms of David, which had helped him to survive much torture at the hands of the Spanish for his Jewish faith. So what I gathered is that the author of this book was because of, you know, the war, the Inquisition against the different religious factors, he wrote this book about his torture, and he also wrote a song. By the 1800s, with Falmouth established as a boom town due to the sugar cultivation, at one point it boasted 3 newspapers in production, the Cornwall Courier, the Falmouth Post, and the Falmouth Gazette. The newspapers advertised goods on sale and the comings and goings of this active commercial port. So I remember we did a show earlier, you know, when we just started about, and as a matter of fact, we've done several shows regarding Falmouth, because not so long ago I featured a writer from Canada who was married to a Jamaican who wrote, just recently published a book, Falmouth, the The Other Jamaica, which I think is on sale right now for any Falmouth fans or people who want to learn more about what happened in that part of Jamaica earlier on, because he wrote a wonderful book about it. You know, the information is put in chronological order so that you can follow the evolution then of Falmouth. But I see that it goes back even here. Falmouth, I suppose because of the port, you know, what it offers in terms of ships, was quite hot in 1897. So its beauty and glory goes way back. Now, let's go back to the article. 3 months later, let's go back. Where am I here now? The launching of the Gleaner. That's what we're tying into, which I think almost every Jamaican, no matter what time you left and those that are still there, know about the Gleaner. But I had no idea it went back so far. In the 1830s, Jamaican newspaper history would be made when the De Cordova brothers launched the Daily Gleaner. Started at a crucial moment in the island's history, when the era of slavery was coming to an end, the paper grew from an advertising sheet the De Cordova brothers used to publicize goods for sale. The first Gleaner, known as the Gleaner and Weekly News, was printed on Saturdays and sold for a subscription of 10 shillings per quarter in the city and 13 shillings per quarter in the rural areas. The first issue included a mission statement of sorts, which the editors promising to please, amuse, and to inform while holding domestic life sacred, no attacks on private lives would be made. Oh, that was some mission statement. So they were promising to please, amuse, and inform and hold life sacred. So I suppose because, you know, information was suppressed before, what they were actually saying is that they were not going to attack politicians like it's so easy to do now and everybody's doing it, but private lives would be held sacred. Interesting, very interesting. Now, 3 months later, the paper's name changed to The Gleaner, a weekly family newspaper devoted to literature, morality, the acts and science and amusement, the arts and science and amusements. So they had a little change or a little more description of what they were all about. 2 years later, the paper extended to 4 pages and was being published daily except for Sundays. Advertisement sheets were distributed for free and subscribers could get the papers by 6 a.m. in the morning. So the early birds got the news first. Although the paper became a public company in 1897, Michael De Cordova served as managing director until 1948. By that time, the Daily Gleaner was involved in charitable causes and in book publishing, having started to print the Gleaner, Geography and History of Jamaica. In the 1920s, for use in schools island-wide, it also created its own imprint, Pioneer Press, which published books by Claude McKay and Tom Redcan, Jamaica's first poets. The Children's Own started publication in 1950, and the Overseas Weekly Gleaner began in 1951, as did the Star. So those of us who sort of grew up on the island are very familiar with the Star, of course. I wasn't that much with the Oversea Weekly because I was living there. But the Children's Own, I remember that distinctly. So I thought that was all very interesting, information about how the Gleaner evolved. Because, you know, like people all over the world, when you are growing up around, in a culture, around certain things, you just take it for granted. You know, it's there and you use it and you enjoy it or, you know, whatever. But you really don't give much thought to how it originated and how it evolved. You know, now we have a chance that most of us are in my age group are in retirement to sort of look back, and that's why I just love doing this research because I get a chance to say, so that's how that happened. And I am always very amazed at the similarities in the stories of how things got started, how they evolved, how many lessons we can learn from the past that can be encouragement, motivation for us now, because similar things are happening around us. And just like almost every story, there are always people against and for. There's always people that will work harder to get a job done and those that just criticize. You know, it just goes back far. But, you know, people with a passion about something that's good, it will always survive. That seemed to be what, no matter what the story is about, the conclusion is always the same. And we have done some varied stories about, you know, unsolved mysteries, legends that we're not sure it's true, real stories, and we have interviewed quite a few real people. But I just continue to be amazed how through it all we are just human, no matter where we were born, what color we were born into, what culture we came out of. As humans occupying the planet, we are so much alike in so many ways. And at this time, I would like to remind our listeners again that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. This is Margaret Marshall. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Where we find something to labrish about. And our main goal and passion is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And although we might not be planning to go back, we still love our culture. And for me, it is just a thrill. I am hoping that my Jamaican children who were born here and my Jamaican grandchildren who might know very little about Jamaica, but they still have their grandparents' genes, will find some of this information interesting when they grow up. Because although, frankly, to be very frank with you, I don't think my own children are that interested in the culture as much as I am, because, you know, they were born and raised here, and they do celebrate their Jamaican roots, but the things that I'm interested in now is not of interest to them at the age and stage they are. It wasn't for me when I was in that part of my life, so, you know, I'm not surprised. But as I got older and had more time on my hands, I just find this very interesting. So it's always good to hear from my listeners what they think. It's always good to know what you would like to hear. And I am always very grateful to everyone who come by and visit with me and who write to me and who participate in the show, because I see our callers on the board, And I am always hoping that you will raise that, your hand, and let me know you're there. But if you don't, it's still cool, and I will labrish along on my own because, you know, I love to chat. So let me go back to what Dr. Tortello talks about printing in Jamaica today. The size of the island notwithstanding, and in true fulfillment of the old saying, we little but we talawa. Oh, there are so many times that we have to say that. Jamaica boasts multiple newspapers, magazines, and journals, including the Gleaner, Star, Observer, the Herald, the Jamaican Journal, Sky Writings, the Jamaican various media and publishing houses and imprints and numerous books and stationery stores. Each May, the island is also the proud sponsor of Calabash, Treasure Beach's increasingly popular literary festival, showcasing local, regional, and international talent. So for those lovers of literature, there's a festival that apparently is held in May, each May, in Treasure Beach. So if you didn't know that before and you like to visit the island or to revisit or return, and you are a lover of books, then, you know, it might be something that you want to check out for this coming May. Now, there was also a couple of tidbits from Wikipedia. And again, I encourage my listeners that have time and really, you know, want to get into history to just, you know, welcome Google. Don't be sort of intimidated by the fact that you might not be very techy. Neither am I. But things are getting more simple as you start doing them. So, you know, get on Google and research what you want to do to find out, because I think there's always information about just anything you can think of. I have just selected to do most of my research about the island's history and things that may not be available to us, information in the current, you know, publications and the different marvelous information coming out of Jamaica at this time that are concentrating on the now and, you know, things that are happening now and more current information. I tend to be concentrating more on way back when, because I am from way back when, not as far back as these articles, of course, but, you know, I am a senior, as I like to call myself. So we're almost at the end of our broadcast, and I want to thank all our callers in and people calling and listening online, and ask you again to give me an idea of I can tell by the hits on the show which shows are more popular, and pretty soon we're going to be doing like the top 10 or whatever, do a rebroadcast on that, because I do have to take a little vacation now and then. I have 3 marvelous grandsons. I'm an old grandmother, but my grandchildren are quite young. So I'm trying to spend as much time as I can with them, you know, before my number is called. Anyway, I encourage all the seniors to start participating in the technology and learning about it and embracing it, because that's how we leave a living legacy. And again, for the listeners who don't know, I think I mentioned that what led me to do this and to try and encourage seniors with a story to share it with the world. Because just as you see in this document that goes back so far, they didn't have what we have now, where things can be preserved forever in cyberspace. But I was a collector all along. I'm the eldest of my generation and had a lot of documentation that other family members might not have. But I had a house fire, and almost all of my treasures were destroyed. And that's really sort of something that drove me to realizing that, you know, no, you can have floods, fires, all sorts of things can happen. But when you have something on a CD or on, you know, the kind of equipment that they have at Blog Talk Radio, all of our shows are archived even after I'm not here. I'm sure that the shows will be accessible for the people who want to listen to them. So it's a marvelous way of preserving your memories, your ideas, your thoughts. And just to know that someone can come by and hear your voice, hear your opinion, I think is worthy of you joining the Labrish. And I do ask that if you know of a senior, or even not necessarily a senior, but someone with an interesting story about themselves or about something they remember, we're always open to having them as a guest on Backyard Labrish, as long as it relates to Jamaica and Jamaican culture. I would love to welcome them. So do visit our website, www.backyardlabrish.com. And we ask you to tell your friends about our little gathering each Wednesday and come back often and share the link with someone who might not even know we exist. So with that said, if I don't see a hand on the board, we will be signing off soon. So I do hope that you enjoy visiting with us, hanging out with us, and joining the Labrish, even though you're not verbal tonight, but I know you're here, and I want to welcome you and thank you for your support. And we're looking forward to the changing of the time. You know, it will soon be where we turn our clocks back. And I hope you're looking forward to enjoying a wonderful, beautiful fall in whatever city you reside. So with that said, I am going to be bidding you good night and hope that you'll be back again with us next week. And also remind you that you can sift through the shows. All the shows are archived if you just use the navigation system that's available on the website, if you're listening on the website itself, or if you click on the information that you get if you're on my list, you will get to the Blog Talk website, and you can select a particular show to listen to, and you can also share that link with someone else. So with that said, I want to bid you good night and hope that you'll come back to visit us next week. So this is Margaret Marshall in the backyard saying good night. And make it a great week. See you next week. Bye.